In association with For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site, this is For Whom the Podcast Tolls. And now, Daniel Black and Ethan Lee.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to the episode of For Whom the Podcast Tolls here on June 7th, 2016. This is the official podcast of For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site. I'm Daniel Black, writer for Whom the Cowbell Tolls, and not joining me is manager Ethan Lee, but instead the Mississippi State beat writer for the Starkville Daily News and the host of Knock It Out Joel on Bulldog Sports Radio, Joel T. Coleman. Hello, Joel.
How are we doing today, Daniel? It's great to be with you today. Glad you had me along, and hopefully I don't scare too many listeners off.
I'm sure you're probably going to be attracting many more because of your immense popularity since joining the media ranks.
I think not that I really care, to be honest with you. I don't judge my self-worth in this world based on this. I think I have probably the fewest Twitter followers of anyone on the beat, so I don't know that I've developed too much of a fan following, but I appreciate everyone that pays attention.
Hey, you have more, you probably have double than Ethan and I combined, so don't feel too bad if you actually have any feelings towards that.
That's quite all right, you know, whether it's 2,000 or 10,000, you know, I prefer quality over quantity anyway, so.
Yes, very good motto there. But on the show today, we're headed to the Super Regionals.
I'll tell you, could you imagine that they'd be in this spot a year ago?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We took a game from Southeast Missouri State, the Fightin' Rick Rays, Cal State Fullerton, and Louisiana Tech. So, yeah, we've just pretty much played all three in mode right through them. We'll talk about that. We're going to go over the NCAA tournament and talk about what's happened so far and maybe talk a little bit about the Super Regional. We don't know. We're playing either Louisiana Lafayette or Arizona. That hasn't been decided yet because I think a game will be game two or their tiebreaker game. Winner take all will be starting shortly as we record. And we've got questions. But let's go ahead and start with the big news, Mississippi State heading to the Super Regional. I want to go ahead and jump right into this by asking you by pretty much just giving you this little command here.
Okay.
Raise your hand if you expected Dakota Hudson to have the worst performance of the weekend. Are you raising your hand?
Yeah, I'm not raising my hand, no.
No, me neither. Me neither. This was a weekend in which the bullpen and really the, I guess, one starter that we, I don't know if you would really call it a surprise that Zach Houston had a good outing, but the two starters that you really, if you were to compare it to Dakota Hudson, you wouldn't expect them to have fantastic outings, and the bullpen really shined. This was sort of a weekend that I guess in some ways not many State fans could have really expected.
Yeah, it was, you know, I guess maybe a little bit odd. You mentioned Dakota really struggling in things in his game, but I tell you what, Dakota this season, this is not to take anything away from what he's done this year. He's been incredible, but against, you know, tough competition, he has, you know, struggled at times this year. You know, twice LSU has kind of gotten to him. He gave up 12 hits and 6 1/3 the first time he faced LSU, and gave up 9 hits and 5 innings in Hoover a couple of weeks ago when he faced LSU. Of course, Florida had, you know, 6 runs and 5 innings against him. A&M, of course, A&M hits everybody, but 10 hits and 7 innings earlier in the year and things. So, I mean, this isn't new that when Hudson faces really good competition that some struggles come. Now, that's not to take anything away from Dakota Hudson. He's an incredible pitcher. But you mentioned earlier, did I expect him to have the worst outing of the weekend? You know, I didn't expect it, but I don't know that it 100% shocks me either. Yeah. I, you know, Dakota Hudson is this team's ace, and there's no denying that.
Although you know, Zach Houston's trying to impersonate an ace here the last couple of weeks, but still, Dakota Hudson is this team's ace. He's the guy that you run out there on Friday night, you know, or Saturday, depending on when the Super Regional starts this week. Still hadn't figured that out yet. I think we might learn more tonight, maybe tomorrow, before we know that for sure. But either way, Dakota Hudson's the guy you run out there. But he, you know, it's not totally earth-shattering news whenever he goes out there and he's not dominant. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not, you know, to make an MLB comparison, he's not Clayton Kershaw. He's not Madison Bumgarner. He's not a guy that you can just bank on, you know, two runs or less every outing. You feel good when he's on the mound. But then again, there's always that chance that he's not going to be on, and he was not on at all on Friday.
Right. And the thing about this weekend is that it just really just absolutely proved that this team can win in any fashion. You see on Friday that we struggled pitching-wise, but we really hit the ball. On Saturday and Sunday, we had okay offensive performances, but, I mean, obviously scored four runs in each. Four runs can win you games a good half of the time. But in those games, the pitching came up and shined. It really showed that this team is just an absolute complete team.
It is. And there's, you know, they can out-hit you on nights whenever Hudson or Sexton's off. They can out-pitch you on nights when they've got their number three starter on the mound. I mean, you never know. And whether it's Ryan Rigby coming out of the pen on Sunday night and slamming the door in a bases-loaded, no-out situation, not allowing a run, I mean, there's really no component of this team that you look at and you just think, oh, there's a weakness. I mean, if there is a weakness on this team, it's still youth and inexperience, because I mean, you have guys like, you know, SEC freshman of the year Jake Mangum. I know he's hitting you know, 430 or whatever it is, but he's still a guy that's never been through this before. I mean, at this point he's proven that doesn't really matter, I think. But is there going to come a point where he grips the bat a little too tight? You know, there's a lot of guys like a Jake Mangum that's never been through this before. And, you know, will the pressure of the moment get to them in a super regional, or should they advance in Omaha on that stage? I guess if you want to pick, you know, nitpick and find a weakness, it's still the fact that this team does rely heavily on a lot of guys that's never been there before. Mm-hmm. Now, conversely, you have a guy like Gavin Collins and Jacob Robson, who, you know, Jacob Robson and Miles Gentry, who is still technically on the roster here, by the way. But, yeah. I mean, those two guys were actually, you know, in Omaha in 13. So you have guys that have done it before, too. And Jake, I was talking with Jake last week, and he was just mentioning how, you know, talking with Gavin and Jacob Robson, he really praised Jacob Robson and John Holland, who, let's not forget, had postseason experience when he played at Florida State back in 13. He played in Omaha. So, you know, there's another guy that's been through all this before. So even then, if you want to nitpick and say this team has a lot of young guys that you don't know what to expect out of them, I mean, that's kind of balanced by the fact of the maturity and things that surround those guys. So, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, pick out an area of this team that's just a weakness, and there's really not one. And Aaron Fitt, you know, with D1 Baseball, I believe I got to talk with Aaron a little bit over the weekend and things, and I believe he tweeted out, I can't remember if it was Sunday night or Monday morning, but that he was already convinced that State was one of the five favorites mm-hmm. to win the national title, and after watching them all this weekend, he's even more convinced, and it's hard not to have that opinion at this point.
That's fun to say. It's fun to say, but at the same time, it's scary to say.
It really is. And again, I know I mentioned this earlier, but I mean, this team a year ago was 24-30. They right. won eight SEC games, and to think that they went from that to this, I'm no college baseball historian, but you know, I dare anyone to dig up somebody that's had a greater turnaround than this. I asked Kendall Rogers back a couple of months ago on my show if he knew of one, and he didn't call one out. He's paid a lot more attention to college baseball through the years than I have. I mean, it's his absolute living to do so. Mm-hmm. So, I can't think of a team. Maybe there's one out there, but it's definitely already one of the biggest turnarounds ever, and it's going to be a lot of fun to sit around and see if it gets capped off with the ultimate prize. But long way to go between now and then.
Mm-hmm. But let's go ahead excuse me, and dive into each game individually and start off with the win over Southeast Missouri State, a 9-5 victory. We mentioned Dakota Hudson started and struggled. 3 1/3, gave up 4 hits, 4 runs, walked 4, and struck out just 2. You pretty much hit on the something that I wrote in my notes, that, you know, he's struggled recently, and pretty much throughout the season, with the exception of Vanderbilt and Ole Miss, struggled against really quality opponents, and shined against the Arkansas, Auburns, and Missouris in the world. You kind of answered this earlier, but I'll just go ahead and ask you this. I don't really want you to repeat anything that you've said exactly. I hope I'm not here with this question, but whenever Dakota Hudson plays a legitimately good opponent, especially a SEMO team that was arguably the best hitting team in this regional, one of the better hitting teams in the tournament, certainly among four seeds, would you kind of expect Dakota Hudson to struggle?
You know, it's going to sound like I'm, you know, dogging on Dakota Hudson here, and I'm not, but I think some comparisons can be drawn between he and guys in that sometimes play Triple A baseball. Mm-hmm. In that when they're in Triple A, they hit 400, or, you know, nobody hits 400, I guess, but the, you know, they hit 330 and jack bombs everywhere, and then they come up to the big leagues and hit 220 and right, and strike out, you know, every other at bat. There are some guys that it seems like they're too good for Triple A and not quite good enough for the big leagues. And I'm not saying that Dakota Hudson isn't good enough to be an ace of a college baseball team. He is, he has those moments where it's like he is so good that some teams have no chance against him. But he's not quite at the level of some of the guys. And I mean, you know, in the SEC, if you want to call them the David Prices or whoever, you know, you can come up with a million different guys that have been dominant in the Southeastern Conference on Friday nights. It's almost like he's not quite to that level, but I don't know, it's like he's right in the middle there of being an absolute dominant ace. Mm-hmm. and being a guy that sometimes can go out there and look like the guy that we saw the last couple of years. You know, it's really strange. Now, don't misunderstand me. He's still going to be, later this week when the MLB draft takes place, he's still going to be a first-round guy. I mean, he is that talented and that good, and he deserves to be in the spot he's in. But, yeah, like you said earlier, and no need to retract, it doesn't totally shock you when he goes out there and struggles against high-quality opponents. But then again, that's why high-quality opponents are high-quality opponents. You know, mm-hmm. when you face Texas A&M, even the very best pitcher in college baseball could go out there and get hammered against A&M. I mean, right, that's why good teams are good teams, because they can figure out good pitching. So it's not so much, I don't think, a knock against Dakota as it is credit to some of these really good offensive teams that even when they play one of the best in the nation, they can still get to him. The thing with Dakota, I think sometimes, I was talking with a guy earlier today, and I'm no scout, but sometimes with Dakota, I think he – this is just Joel's very unprofessional opinion, so you can take it, leave it, throw it in the garbage, do what you want to with it. But I think sometimes he doesn't trust his stuff quite enough, and he tries to – you know, it's been said before that some pitchers pitch and some pitchers throw. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes Dakota Hudson has stuff that's good enough that he could almost just throw. and I think sometimes he just needs to rear back and let his 95-mile-an-hour fastball do its job. And sometimes maybe he gets a little too cute and his control kind of gets away from him sometimes. And sometimes he, you know, leaves pitches in places where he doesn't want to leave them and things too. So, but anyway, his stuff is really good. I don't mean to go through all this and say that he doesn't deserve to be State's ace. He does. He would be an ace on just about every team in the conference, as you think back there. I mean, there's a few he would have some pretty stiff competition, but I mean, he deserves to be in the spot he's in. But, yeah, there's going to be some opponents that get to him. But then again, there's going to be some opponents that get to everybody. So,
mm-hmm. But in relief for Dakota Hudson was Ryan Rigby and later Daniel Brown. And this is pretty much just going to start a consistent trend of this weekend of just absolutely dominant bullpen pitching, which was something that at the beginning of the year you kind of really didn't expect to say at this point. We mentioned Ryan Rigby, 2 1/3, gave up 3 hits, 1 run, struck out 2, and then Daniel Brown came in and completely shut everyone down. 3 1/3, gave up no hits, no runs, walked 1, and struck out 4. Not really much of, well, I guess I could turn this into a question. This is obviously, and we're going to get to more bullpen stuff with Ryan Rigby in Game 3, as which was pretty much the performance of the weekend. You can make the argument for Zach Houston, too. But I'll retract the statement I made earlier about not really expecting it, because at this point, this is just purely the bullpen has finally matured against good teams.
Yeah, I think you've heard, to take it over to other sports, you hear football coaches all the time talk about how in game 7 or 8 of the season, you don't have freshmen anymore because, I mean, mm-hmm. they've had enough experience that you know, nothing shocks them anymore. And that's probably even more applicable to baseball. I mean, when you play, I guess at this point, State's played somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 baseball games so far this year. So, I mean, at this point, after going through 60 games, whether you're in them or not, you're not really a freshman. Nothing surprises you anymore. So you go out there, and whether it's Ryan Rigby or whoever it is, of course, Daniel Brown has plenty of experience. But, at this point, the bullpen is really – there's no question that they're young, kind of like we said earlier, and maybe there is a moment that gets too big for them, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's too much veteran leadership around them, and actually, like kind of like you said, it seems like they're getting better down the stretch. So, there again, if anybody wants to point at that bullpen and say that's the Achilles heel of the team, well, their performances this weekend suggest otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about Daniel Brown that's so great is that he's sort of had a bit of an up-and-down year. He's had great he's got a string of great performances, but then a couple of poor performances back-to-back. And knowing that it seemed that – he obviously has playing experience, but not a lot of playing experience in, say, the NCAA tournament. It's really good to see a guy like Daniel Brown looking like that we could fully depend on him to come in situations like this and shut opponents down.
Yeah, and, you know, it's really just a continuation of what he's done since he got removed from the starting rotation. I think maybe he's had one bad outing. I don't have the stats right in front of me anymore. I think maybe he's had like one, maybe two bad outings over the course of the final couple of months of the season. I mean, he's been really, really, really good. And mm-hmm. and I had a talk with Daniel Brown back, I guess it was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago now, about how he really enjoyed that middle relief role. And you know, as a starting pitcher, you kind of have to save some of your bullets because you may be out there for 6-7 innings at a time. And when you come in the 5th, 6th inning, like he did on Friday, I mean, you can come in and just unleash the fury, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't really have to hold anything back. And he said he really enjoyed that coming out of the pen. And you know, he's not Jacob Lindgren yet. You know, I'm not ready to say that. But I mean, he's kind of playing that role right now of a guy that can come in and really, you know, shut down opponents for multiple innings if need be. And, you know, it seems like John Cohen always likes to have that lefty to do that, whether it was a Chad Jurado or then a Lindgren or now Daniel Brown. And he's really kind of fell into that role and not just – you know, been adequate at it. He's been really, really good. And you know, we'll see if he can keep that up. And at least to this point, I think State's in good position when you got Brown and we've already mentioned Rigby and Blake Smith's done some really nice work for State out of the pen. I mean, there are plenty of options down there. And you know, the bullpen probably gets deeper too when you think that if Zach Houston's going to be your number 3 starter, I mean, you got Connor Pilkington down there now too. So anyway, we'll see how it goes. But there's just so many, not just options, but really good options. It doesn't do you any good to have a bunch of, you know, crappy options. State doesn't, you know, have to have many crappy options. You know, it seems like anybody they want to go to is a guy that has had some success this year.
Mm-hmm. But on the other side of the ball, hitting, as I mean, obviously Rigby and Brown had pretty good performances, but as a whole, looking at me, we gave up 5 runs, wasn't the best pitching day. But hitting, absolutely. It was one of the better hitting days of the year, scoring 9 runs off 14 hits. Obviously, the best individual performance, and pretty much this one individual performance is pretty much what locked up the regional MVP for him. Brent Rooker, 2-for-4, 4 RBIs, all of those RBIs coming from 2 swings of the bat, 2 home runs that pretty much kept Mississippi State in the game, down 2-0. He had a solo shot to make it 2-1, and down 4-1, he had a 3-run shot to make it 4-4. We've pretty much already talked about how State can win in any situation. But the one thing I do want to talk about is in this game in particular, this team has shown resiliency throughout the season. I mentioned we were down 2 runs at one point and 3 runs at another, but we were down at of different number of runs at 3 different times in the game, being down 2-0, then 4-1, then 5-4, and every single time Mississippi State was able to strike back, either cut the lead, tie the lead, or ultimately take the lead in this game.
Yeah, I feel like, again, I may be retracking some, but when you think back last year, this team found ways to lose. Mm-hmm. And this year, it's a complete 180. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, 2-0, 4-1, whatever it is, that this team finds ways to pull out wins. And I mean, a large portion of that obviously has to do with the fact that you have guys that can put the ball over the wall. I mean, if you want to be a team, whether it's college baseball, pro baseball, probably any level of baseball, whatever you want to do, if you want to be a team that can overcome deficits, I mean, it helps to have guys that can, you know, shoot a haymaker or two at you and hit somebody in the chin and knock them back on their feet pretty quickly. And State has that, whether it's Rooker or Collins or Humphreys. I had a conversation with a fellow back a few weeks ago, and it was the first time he had seen Mississippi State play this year, and kind of a little bit of an exaggeration, but not so much really. He said it's almost like this team has, talking about Jake Mangum, said that has an Adam Frazier at the top of the order and then 7 or 8 Hunter Renfroes behind him. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, because we all know Hunter Renfro was a first-round pick of the Padres and probably be a MLB player, you know, any month now, I guess could be up. But, you know, I'm not saying that all those guys in the lineup are first-round draft choices, but his point's well taken in that just about – you got a guy in Mangum at the top of the order. Seems like he's on every at bat, and behind him you have guys that are hitting the ball in the gap over the wall. You know, State really feels like whether you think of Humphreys, Collins, Rooker, Nate Lowe, just about anybody that steps up there, you feel like there's a chance to see the ball fly out of the yard. So when you're down 3-4 runs, I mean, that's nothing. You hear people talk all the time about a bloop and a blast. Well, you know, State's more than capable of that, and heck, you may see 2 or 3 blasts, you know, in a row. So it's just really amazing what this offense has done, and I don't think that there's any situation that they feel uncomfortable in or feel like they can't come back from.
Mm-hmm. And you made the 2013 comparison, which made me want to get to this point. I listened to your friend Brian Haydad on the B. I guess it was just an individual B on that one show, because it was just him. I'm not funny. But he made a point that this is one of the most talented teams probably in Mississippi State baseball history. It's without a doubt the most talented team that John Cohen's had, and obviously the best team Cohen's had during his time at State was 2013. And, you know, in 2013, coming out of that one MLB draft, you know, Adam Frazier was selected and Chad Jurado was selected and Hunter Renfro was obviously selected. But now on this this year's draft, obviously Dakota Hudson will be selected, but there could be 4, 5, maybe 6 other guys that could be drafted from this team. And that doesn't even include Jake Mangum, who, if he continues the way he's playing right now, he'll be drafted in 2 years. And it just shows that this could end up being, if you look back at whatever they're going to do in the MLB or how this team will finish out in the postseason, this could end up being one of, if not the greatest team in Mississippi State history.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I guess ultimately teams are kind of judged by where they end up finishing. But, I mean, I don't care if this team comes out this weekend and gets swept by whether it's Lafayette or Arizona, whoever ends up winning that game that's later tonight as we record. I don't care if this Mississippi State team comes out and gets swept this next weekend. This team is far and above better than that 2013 team that was a national finalist. I know teams are ultimately probably judged more so by where they finish, but when you just look at the talent and how you feel about games going into them, I think you take this club over that club any day of the week. Right. And you know, that's pretty impressive in and of itself. But you think back to – I say think back. I was 3-4 years old when those teams in the late 80s were making their – you know, making the noise that they made. It's tough for me to compare to those teams because I, like I said, at 3-4 years old, didn't really see those guys play. So, but you just, I have seen this team play, and I know that, you know, that team, that some of those teams may have had Palmeiro and Clark and things, but I mean, did they have this lineup depth? Did they have this pitching depth? I know they had really good guys, and arguments can be made, and maybe even, you know, maybe those teams were better. I'm not saying that they weren't, but I'm just saying that the 2016 Bulldogs are definitely in that conversation with the greatest teams that this school's ever seen. And you know, but of course, in the past, the greatest teams that this school's ever seen, none of them lifted a national championship trophy. So the only way for this club to firmly say, yes, this is the best team ever in the history of the school, is if they go to Omaha and get the job done like nobody else before them has.
That'd be fun.
Does that make you smile a little bit, Daniel?
A little bit, yeah. Just a little bit. But let's go ahead and move on. Oh, this is going to be a good segue here. To an opponent that's won a couple of national titles before. Hey now. Cal State Fullerton. We beat them 4-1. And Austin Sexton got the start, and he pitched quite well. He pitched quite well. 6 1/3, gave up 5 hits, 1 run, struck out 4. It's pretty interesting how whenever, at least nationally on a wider scale looking at this team, everyone talks about in our starting rotation, you know, Dakota Hudson, you know, he'll be first round pick. But really, if you kind of think about it, Austin Sexton has performed as well as Dakota Hudson, if not better, this season.
Particularly at home. Mm-hmm. At Duty Noble Field, Sexton has just been, you know, ace quality himself. And I kind of alluded to it a little bit in a tweet during the game the other day about Sexton's poise. And then after the game, you heard Rick Vanderhook, Cal State Fullerton's coach, kind of say the same thing, that how gritty that Sexton was out on the mound. This will again sound like I'm dogging on Dakota Hudson by saying this, and I'm not. I'm not dogging him at all. I think he is, like I said, first-round talent and has a lot of poise himself. But I just really feel like if you put the amount of poise that Sexton has with Dakota Hudson's God-given talent and ability, you just have like the mega college ace there. Mm-hmm. I think Hudson poise is pretty good, but I think of the two, this is just my opinion again, I think of the two, Sexton is the one that isn't as influenced as much by the base runners and just that doesn't bother him as much, pitching out of the stretch, what have you, and things. That's not to say he always has success with it, but I don't think that it really affects his pitching style so much. He, you know, nothing changes. I think that if you could put that same poise along with Hudson's skill set, it would, like I said, make an ultimate beast out there on the mound. But they're both pretty good individually, even without that. But, I mean, nothing gets to Sexton. He doesn't care. It doesn't matter what the situation is. He goes out there. I think it was the Alabama series in Tuscaloosa a few weeks ago. It wasn't his best outing by any stretch. He left the game in the middle of the fourth inning, I believe it was. And, of course, that was a game that Cohen probably shouldn't have pulled him in the middle of the fourth inning, but that's neither here nor there. But in the course of that game, when there's a runner that gets on base against Mississippi State in general, but especially when Sexton's on the mound, you can guarantee he's going to throw to first, you know, 50 million times. That's just how this team operates. And he was doing that and just getting ragged and ragged by the Alabama fans. And he doesn't care. Nothing bothers him out there. And he just kept doing it. And there's just an edge to the way Austin Sexton pitches. He goes out there with a lot of confidence, and I mean, he's been through the wars before. This is his third year in the program. He and Hudson both, you know, they were making starts a couple of years ago for the state team that went to the regional down in Lafayette. And I mean, they both made starts that year and got plenty of experience. And they've both been through their struggles. They've been through their ups. They've been through their downs. So, I mean, that's why I think State's in good position with not only Sexton but Hudson. They both struggled before. I don't think that because Dakota Hudson's had two straight bad starts that he's going to go out this next weekend and have a bad start. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to wash that clean and go out there and do really well as he did earlier this season when he struggled and came back strong for several starts in a row. I don't think it's going to play into his mind any, and Austin Sexton's the same way. I think that this team has here it is. I guess I do sound like the homer of the beat maybe by saying this, but I don't think that these guys are just physically talented. I think that every single one of them are mentally talented as well. Mm-hmm. Nothing gets to them, and they are just – they are business-like. That's the word Cohen used last night, was business-like. They're just business-like enough to – it seems like covering a professional team, to be honest with you, the way they carry themselves, but yet they're loose enough. I mean, you have Cole Gordon running up and down the dugout with a bandana on his head and a mullet. Mm-hmm. They have, it's like they found the perfect combination. And that's, you know, Cohen was talking last night about how businesslike they are. And then before the regional, before the regional championship game the other night, he was talking about how, you may can pick apart some of the flaws of this team, but one flaw they don't have is being able to play loose. He said, mm-hmm. you know, they have no problem playing loose. So it's like they found the perfect mixture to be businesslike about everything, but yet don't take everything so seriously. And, you know, it has really just seemed to work out to this point. It would be a shame, really, for everything to have come together as well as have to see this team not get to Omaha. So we'll see what happens with them. But I'll tell you what, the mixture they have going, whether it's Sexton, Hudson, you name them, their maturity level is through the roof.
Mm-hmm. And then Blake Smith came in for relief. And I'll say this, and he pitched quite well, 2 1/3, walked 2, strike out 3, gave him no hits, no runs. I'll say this. Obviously, one of the bigger concerns going into the Super Regional is the status of Reed Humphreys, and you know more about that than I'd say the typical fan does. But if, in fact, we will not have Reed Humphreys for the Super Regional, obviously we won't have the bat, and that's kind of irreplaceable in terms of just, I mean, it's Reed Humphreys. But Cohen did use the analogy that it's basically losing two guys. I do agree with that in some ways, but with how Blake Smith has pitched recently, he could possibly go in and fill into that Reed Humphreys closer role. We see Blake Smith, this was his fifth save of the year, and he's only two behind Reed Humphreys for the largest number of saves on the team. So,
yeah, I mean, and State proved over the weekend they can win a regional without using Reed Humphreys. So, I mean, they could win a super without using Reed Humphreys on the mound. That's not to, you know, say that Humphreys' contributions on the mound haven't been valuable. They have. But, again, there's that depth showing up again. He's not a guy that is just completely irreplaceable. I mean, he's a guy that you darn sure want in the lineup, though, and you darn sure like to have him as a pitching option. I'm not saying that it's not a loss. Mm-hmm. It's just a loss that State can cover. And, you know, in the past, it's probably a loss that State couldn't cover. This team didn't have that kind of depth a year ago. And this year, whether it's in the outfield, you know, your lineup probably does take a little bit of a hit. But then again, let's say Cody Brown has to play a little more. Well, that's a guy that's had a ton of clutch plays, hits, things for State through the years. I mean, it's not like all hope is lost if that's the way it has to go. And I mean, there's other ways, too. I mean, you can put Rooker in the outfield and have an outfield of Rooker and Mangum and Robson, and then all of a sudden you can, you know, catch Eli Marrero and DH, you know, fill in the DH role instead of Rooker, it'd be Kruger, or do something like that. I mean, there's a whole lot of different routes you could take to replace that offense of Humphreys if you needed to. And then again, it's an if. We learned today, texted with John Cohen a little bit this morning, and he let me know that all that is in fact, not a break in Reed Humphrey's right hand. It is just soreness, just like all the reports that I'm sure everybody's read. It's just soreness. So he could be fine for the weekend. I don't know. We'll talk with John and the guys later in the week and learn for sure. But yeah, right now he's a guy that could play. I think probably State might be crossing their fingers maybe and hoping for the Saturday, Sunday, Monday scheduling of the mm-hmm. regional just to give Reed another day. That could be something that really benefits him. But like we said, I mean, if he doesn't get to pitch, whether it's Blake Smith or whoever, I mean, I think State can absorb the blow. And, if Dakota Hudson goes out there and pitches a complete game like he's done so many times this year on Friday or the first game of the regional, it may be a situation where between Hudson and Sexton, you don't need anybody out of the pen. So, mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes. But as of right now, it's a day-to-day thing with Reed, and we'll learn more as the week goes along.
One thing, and this will probably just be the last note on this game. The thing that really intrigued me about this game in particular is not outside of the pitching, just the defense as a whole, particularly that third baseman, Gavin Collins. Gavin Collins, he leads the team in errors, and this is a guy that's, I think Cohen said, he's played third base for 9 months now, and he's sort of still adapting to the position. But this is something that I guess Gavin Collins has been going through all year, that I think the negatives in most cases and things outshine the positives. You know, you could probably notice a rotten apple and a bunch of 1,000 more. You could probably notice that first before you notice all the nice apples. If that's a terrible analogy. goodness, I need to work on that. But in this game, he commits the two errors that Mississippi State had in this game. At the same time, you see Gavin Collins making probably the biggest play of the entire game in the sixth inning, up 1-0, when he gets the guy out at first with a man on third with one out. It's just one of those interesting things that it's not only a testament to the defense, but the entire thing that, or to the entire team, that, we make mistakes every now and then, but we can make it up with an even bigger positive on the next play or two.
Yeah, and you mentioned that play. It was obviously the biggest play of that game in talking with the guys after the game, but when you really think back about it, I mean, if you had to pick one play that was the play of the regional, that may have been it. It's probably a push, I guess. Maybe it's that, or maybe it's the Brent Rooker 3-run homer that basically gave State, the fuel to stay in the winner's bracket after that first day on day one. So I guess maybe one of those two plays would be the ones you'd pick as kind of the defining moment of the regional looking back. Either that, or I guess you could throw Rigby's performance with the bases loaded, no outs in there too. But anyway, the play that Collins made after having a couple of bad errors earlier in the game. And then it wasn't just that. I mean, Cohen mentioned too about how he had three or four big league level plays, after the play, nailing the guy at the plate. Gavin Collins, I know he leads the team in errors and things, but he shows flashes of being a really, really good third baseman too. I know that he has a lot of errors, and I don't know that he has everyone's confidence just yet over there, but like you said, he's only been playing the position for 9 months, and he looks really good at times. Yes, he's had some mistakes over there at times too, but I mean, he's a guy that on several plays, Robbie Falk and I were talking in the press box the other night on the whole, like, a bunt play charging in. I mean, he's as good charging in from third as just about anyone you'll see, and his mm-hmm. arm is extremely accurate and strong. And I'm just sitting here thinking, I don't really remember a ton of throwing errors of his errors this year. I'd be an idiot and be ashamed of myself if I went back and looked at that. But just off the top of my head, it seems like most of his errors are, booting the ball or something to that effect. It really does. He's a guy that has turned himself into a very good third baseman, because he still has his mistakes. But when you couple the fact that he can make some outstanding plays, and when he's at the plate, I know he didn't have the greatest regional, but he's a very good offensive player too. I mean, he is by far and away, State's best option over there, which, mm-hmm. Of course, I guess we know at this point because he starts every game over there. But yeah, I think you do have to – I guess what I'm trying to say is the numbers are a little bit deceiving on Gavin. He does have some errors and some mistakes over there, but then again, too, he makes a lot of plays that I think some other guys might not make.
And then moving on to the final game, pretty much just, I guess, maybe not offensively, but just it was a game that State had in the beginning and just continued and just kept clutching onto it and clutching onto it and clutching onto it until Louisiana Tech, I guess we just strangled them, I guess. Just one of those things where it just held on and it couldn't breathe. I'm horrible at analogies, Joel. You need to teach me how to make good analogies.
I don't know that I'm great at them either. Brian is pretty good at them, but when it comes to analogies, I'm not the greatest in the world. But maybe as far as that Sunday game goes, maybe it's like death by a thousand paper cuts. You know, there was no one big blow. It was just a run here, a couple of runs here, a run there kind of deal. But obviously, and we've already hit on it a couple of times, but the moment of the game was Ryan Rigby. And that's not to take away from Zach Houston, who was probably – you know, I mean, six innings of shutout baseball, pitched into the seventh. But, you know, Love Tech with their offense, they're always a threat. And they have the bases loaded, nobody out, tying run coming to the plate. And you have Ryan Rigby come in, strikeout, fly out. I mean, that from then on, I mean, it was obvious at that point which direction the game was going to go. I felt confident enough after that I pretty much had my game story signed, sealed, and delivered in the in the bottom of the seventh, and was just waiting on the final out to push send. You know, I of course I've done that before and had to go back and delete. But no, it was one of those games that after that moment that Rigby kind of slammed the door on him. You just really felt like that was it. And I mean that was the moment of the game. Looking back, that was definitely the highlight that you pick out and say that was where the game was signed, sealed, and delivered.
And on that death by a thousand paper cuts, one analogy that I like to use, and this is inspired from a YouTube video, it's just beating someone with a spoon until they die.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one too. It's a little not quite what mentioned Gavin Collins earlier on after Saturday night's game. We were talking to him about going out and finishing the job on Sunday, and he said we're going to treat it like it's the last game we ever play, and we're just going to go out there and rip somebody's head off. So,
oh, wow. There you go.
So, you know, beating somebody with a spoon isn't quite as violent sounding as ripping someone's head off, but either way, the job got done.
I guess players maybe have a bit more of an aggressive mindset than fans do. But you pretty much said the defining moment of that game, and arguably the defining moment of the regional, is Ryan Rigby's sixth inning, which pretty much got Mississippi State through to their sixth super regional in school history, and the third under John Cohen. I'm gonna upset some people, Joel.
That's fine. You know, it's your show. You can do that.
Cough, cough. John Cohen is the most super regional appearances in state history. Cough, cough.
Oh, I guess I'm trying to think in my head now. This is his eighth season at State, and the super regional format started in 99. So, it's only been going on for like 17 years. So he's been here like half of the super regional era.
Hey, okay, fine. I was hoping to upset people and get people to bash me, but you.
But no, I mean, I've always. Even when, you know, I'll take people back, I guess, before I was on the beat, I don't think it's any secret what my background is and who my favorite collegiate team and my alma mater and all that whole nine yards. I don't think it's any secret who that is. I've always been a John Cohen guy. I mean, I know people bash him. People get so aggravated with him. I don't think – first of all, he's just a really good dude with us. I mean, you know, I know that fans and things don't get to have a lot of those experiences, but I mean, he's one of the few coaches that, you know, when he comes in for his media sessions with us, I mean, it's not just media. I mean, he'll talk to us about whether it's baseball or just crazy stuff. I mean, he spends a little bit of time with us when he has a second to just talk. I mean, he's a really, really good dude, for one. And two, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. Now, he has a different way of doing things than I would do them. If I was the manager the head coach of the team, you know, we'd probably do things a little different. But you have to give the guy credit. I mean, he manages to the team that he has. You know, the teams of the last few years hadn't had a Nate Lowe and guys like that up and down the lineup to just swing and hit the ball in the gap. So, I mean, he had to manufacture runs a little bit. I know people got tired of seeing the bunts and everything, but, I mean, he played the hand he was dealt. And this year you've seen him kind of – yeah, I mean, this team bunts every now and then, but – what team doesn't? And sometimes it's smart to bunt. And this year he's kind of let the guys do their thing. And I know people talk all the time about how Cohen meddles and stuff. And sometimes he does overcoach. And sometimes I think he overthinks things. I mentioned the Alabama series earlier. I think that was a perfect case that day in Tuscaloosa where he overmanaged and overthought himself, I guess, and basically pitched the entire roster that day in that first seven-inning game. Of course, it went to extra innings, ultimately went nine innings. But he has some of those moments and tendencies that frustrate you. But what coach or manager doesn't? You mm-hmm. know, anybody that wears that hat and gets paid the big bucks is going to get questioned and second-guessed. But when you look at his track record and what he's done, I just feel like anybody at this point that looks at John Cohen and thinks, oh, I can't stand him. I wish he would leave Mississippi State and whatever. I mean, I think that's probably just a selfish, in my opinion, just a wrong thought to have. I mean, I think he's, you know, one of the best college baseball coaches in the country. And kind of like moving the game to 1:30 the other day thing. That was
brilliant.
It was brilliant. And the only thought on that dude's mind is winning baseball games. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that maybe as a fan, people got upset. Of course, it seemed like everybody made it out to the park anyway.
Yeah.
But I think maybe as a fan, that aggravates you. Like, oh, Cohen doesn't care about us or whatever. You know, as a fan, why would you want your head coach to care about you? You should want your head coach to care about winning baseball games. And so he thought that by moving the game to 1:30, that gave Mississippi State the best chance to win the regional. And he ultimately, you know, turned out to look like a genius with all the delays and stuff. But even if that hadn't played out, still, just to have the, I guess, guts to say, this is what gives my team the best chance to win. I know there's going to be some flack for it, but, I mean, this is what helps us. So mm-hmm. this is what I'm going to do. I think, as a fan, you should respect the heck out of that. I mean, you know, I'm a Braves fan, of course.
Yeah,
of course they suck.
Yep.
But, you know, as a fan, I don't care if the manager of the Braves, you know, if Brian Snitker at this point, you know, interim manager of the Braves, however you want to say it, but I don't care if he cares about the fans. All I care about is if he can win baseball games and if he is doing everything in his power to do that. I mean, that's what he's paid to do. Now, that's not to say that Cohen doesn't like the fan. I mean, he'll be the first to tell you. Yeah, he usually opens up every post-game press conference he has with thanking the fans and the atmosphere and how it leads to wins and carries the guys through. I mean, he acknowledges that. He doesn't – I mean, he's not sitting there saying, stick it, fans. You know, that's mm-hmm. not what he's doing. But his priority is winning baseball games. And I know people get aggravated at him, but I just feel like if you're still at the point where you can't stand John Cohen, I think you really need to go reevaluate what the heck you want in a college baseball coach at Mississippi State.
May I give – I'm not going to call him out by name, but anyone who is a constant reader of the From the Cowbell Tolls comments knows who this is. There is a guy who still wants Cohen fired who thinks that whenever we play well and win, 2013 and this season an example, it's because it's in spite of John Cohen.
Well, I'd like to, you know, just throw out who brought all these players to – I know Butch Thompson had a big play role in it too, but whenever you commit to a school, you're not just committing to the pitching coach, you're committing to the head coach too. Mm-hmm. And so I know that Butch played a role in it, but guess what? John Cohen did too. But, I mean, when you look back at Cohen's career, whether it was at Kentucky or whatever you want to do, John Cohen's always had players, man. Yep. I mean, he can get them in there. And oh, by the way, when John Cohen, you know, has a chance to get his guys in there, he has success. You know, year three at Kentucky, he, you know, didn't win the SEC outright, but had a worst to first moment there at Kentucky where they go from the bottom of the league to sharing the league title. And then, of course, he did that here this year, except became the first man to ever do it outright. So, I mean, he just wins, man. And the only years he hadn't won at Mississippi State here, maybe it sounds like I'm making excuses for him, but just to put it in perspective.
Rebuilding years.
yeah, the first 2 years, which were obviously rebuilding years, and then, you know, you had last year, which it was kind of the adjustment year with the new ball. I mean, John Cohen he's always thinking. Everything he does is thinking. I was having a conversation. John didn't tell me this, but a guy I was talking to the other day said that he had heard that John was already talking about how the new left field lofts and left field would, like, impact the wind and things blowing in. So I haven't had a chance to ask John about that to see if he said that or not. But if he has, that wouldn't shock me in the least, because he looks at every single detail of everything. And so he recruited to the style of game back a few years ago, and he had guys like Ross Mitchell and guys like that on the roster. And then when the ball changed, I mean, it took a year or two to get, the Nate Lowe's and the Brent Rookers and all those guys in. And now that he had a year or so to readjust his strategy, look where this team is now. I don't understand how people – I can understand people that get aggravated sometimes with some of the calls that he makes, but you're going to do that with any coach. I don't understand people that want John Cohen fired.
Amen. But, yeah, Mississippi State will be playing either Arizona or UL Lafayette in the Super Regional. We don't know who's going to be – obviously, we don't know who we're going to be playing exactly, so we'll probably just skip that till Thursday's show. But I will take note on the Arizona website, there is a great picture of Greg Byrne on the top right corner that says Greg Byrne's Wildcat Wednesday. So good for him. Just really quickly before we get into questions, let's talk about the NCAA tournament as a whole. Joel, I think I know the answer to this question, but has there been a regional? There we go. Has there been a regional that has stuck out to you in particular, other than ours? I think I know the answer to this question.
Maybe shock value. I mean, you don't have to look far up the road to find that one.
Good choice.
I mean, and that's not a rivalry jab or anything like that. I mean, that's just a team that was on the cusp of being a national seed that didn't even win a game in their home regional. That's just, you know, remarkable to me, and that was a really tough regional, but I mean, you know, by and large they all are at this point. I mean, you're dealing with the 64 best teams in the country. That's the one that stands out just from a shock value standpoint. I mean, the Vandy regional stands out just because those boys didn't want to play. And you can't blame them for not wanting to play. It's just the nature of the beast, you know. The things have to go on, unfortunately, as far as all that goes, and so anyway, that stands out, I guess, just for that reason. You wonder what Vandy would have done under, you know, circumstances that weren't so tragic. I guess probably when you look at the country as a whole, you probably still have to look at Texas A&M and think, man, the way they mash the ball, they've got to be the favorite to win the whole thing.
Yeah,
at this point, so. We'll see how it all shakes out, but those were that may be three of the bigger storylines, I guess, that have caught my eye.
And we have a question about the Ole Miss regional, because of course we do. In addition to just the fashion in which Ole Miss lost, it's not only that, but, you know, Ole Miss was facing Tulane, who I believe won the AAC, and then Utah, who won the Pac-12. Neither of them won the regional either. Boston College, who I don't know where they finished in the ACC, but I presume it wasn't great, knowing the other teams that are in that conference, just came out of nowhere and won that regional.
I don't know. I don't know that anybody had that pegged going into that. I mean, you look at Tulane and things, and obviously, I mean, you look at the seeding. But if Ole Miss wasn't going to win that regional, you would have thought it would have been a Tulane as opposed to anybody else. But, yeah, to have Boston College go up to Oxford, and, you know, they won the regional without ever having to play Ole Miss, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they kind of got had the perfect draw there, in that the way things fell, they never had to play the host team, and they took advantage of their situation, and now they'll play in a super regional and things. So, yeah, you kind of wonder what led to Ole Miss's demise a little bit and things. But, you know, Ole Miss is – they've had to rely on that bullpen heavily all year, and it kind of seemed to catch up to them down the stretch a little bit. So they hadn't had a Dakota Hudson, Austin Sexton to pitch 7-8 innings every single time out, it seems. And so they've had to rely heavily on that pen. And it finally caught up to them, and Tulane, you know, got to the pen. Utah got to the pen. You wonder what would have happened if those guys weren't so worn down. But then again, you can't really fault Mike Bianco. He didn't have a dominant starter, so he had to rely on that pen all year long, and it finally caught up to him at the end.
Well, let's go ahead and get into questions, and I'm going to go ahead and give a little, I guess, a prologue here, or an epilogue. I don't know the difference. They end in log. There are two listeners of the show. I know one you're probably familiar with, knowing you're a Bulldog Sports Radio guy. There's Lewis. And then there's Mr. Vanderlip at KT Vanderlip. He's known as the Large Dog trademark.
Hey.
Yeah. They both consider themselves the biggest fans of this show. So we have a competition going on that's based off solely of their questions. And we have it in a baseball format where there are 9 innings. Each inning is just pretty much a show. And I just give out runs at random. They're like, I don't really have much of a template about how I give out these runs. But just in case, but knowing that you probably have no idea what I would have been talking about, I had to explain that to you.
I appreciate that.
Mr. Vanderlip never gave us any questions. I think he's at work, so it's a bit unfair to him. So I'll just go ahead and give him a run anyway. So it's currently, the score was 8-8. It's currently, I believe, the fourth inning now. So it's now 9-8 in favor of Mr. V. And after we recorded, he sent us a picture of his dog. So that gives him he should get another run for the dog, because who doesn't like dogs? 10-8. But Lewis gets a run because he had the first questions and he had the most questions. So that's 2 runs. 10-10. Isn't this exciting?
Yes.
Let's get into the actual questions. What is your favorite GIF or JIF or however you want to say it on the MSU keyboard?
I haven't even looked at that thing in forever.
Me neither.
Is the Gavin Collins, you know, after the double where he, you know, shakes a jig at second base, is that on there? I've seen that GIF. If it's on there, that may be my favorite.
Let's check it out. Let's see if it's on here. Yes.
Is it okay? I think I'm gonna go with that. That's just hilarious to me. I guess if you want to go old school, I'm assuming this one's still on there. The last time I looked, it was the Hunter Renfro salute.
Of course.
After the homer in Omaha in 13, it'd be one of those two.
Probably my favorite is the one right by Gavin Collins of just Cole Gordon dancing in the dugout, you know, bandana, mullet, and all. Give a little dance in the dugout. But anyways, more questions from Lewis. He's been talking about his diet in his questions often, and he has an update for us. This is not a question, but it's here. He's lost 10 pounds through 3 weeks. It's good for him. So
yeah, it's not bad.
He deserves a run for that. 11-10, Lewis leads now. Next, my bulldog, named Bell, went into I can't pronounce this word,
anaphylactic shock, I'm sure.
Yes. From ant bites over the weekend. She almost didn't make it, but is doing well now. Do you know how terrifying this was for me?
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
I mean, pets are like kids, so, yeah, that's never fun. And no. Not to mention the fact that even if, you know, Bale or whatever your pet's name is happens to make it, okay, vet visits usually aren't the cheapest thing in the world either. So, but hopefully it wasn't too much, and glad that Bell's doing okay.
Yeah, I am too. Next up, how hard was it for y'all to stay awake during the Sunday game? You mean the Sunday game that just happened to start at 8:44 p.m.? It was an entertaining game, just very late.
Most of us stay up late anyway, so no big deal on that front.
You're used to it, I know.
That's right, and it was a pretty entertaining game too, with a lot on the line. So we were good, and you know, had plenty of water and Coke and whatever in the press box to keep everybody wired if they needed it.
Joel, is it a great day to be a Bulldog?
You can't really answer that question. I haven't gone down that road in a while, but I will say that if I had to guess, the answer to that would be absolutely.
If he's speaking for the others in this situation, he's not maybe saying that as for himself. He's just speaking for the others.
That's correct.
Next, how funny, you can't answer this question either, how funny was it the way Ole Miss lost their two regional games?
Just as a sports fan, that was a really good game. That I watched a good bit of that, the Tulane Ole Miss game, and saw the end of the other one, the Utah Ole Miss game. But just as a sports fan, you enjoy late inning drama. So it was a lot of fun just to watch the games for sure. I'm sure Lewis, found more fun than just watching the game though.
Yeah, I'm sure. Once again, he's speaking for Lewis in this situation. Next, Joel. I don't like this question. Are you being held against your will on the show? Blink twice for yes. I hope you don't. You're blinking twice, aren't you?
No comment.
I can't see him blinking. You can't see him blinking. So, it's like those Tootsie Pop commercials. The world may never know. Yes or no? I hate this question because I don't like 50-50 questions. Yes or no? State will go to Omaha.
I mean, if I've got to pick one or the other there, I'm picking yes because I think that they're better than either team they end up facing. And here in Starkville next weekend, I mean, it's going to – obviously, as a national seed, I mean, I'm not breaking news here, but, I mean, it's going to be a big upset if they don't.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to – watch what I'm about to do here, Joel. Hey, Lewis, wait till Thursday. Tune in on Thursday for my answer.
Ooh.
Got to keep them hanging. Got to get that extra listen.
Sure, you got that hook in there.
I have to get that extra one listen for the next show. It's going to make all the difference. So, yeah, that's all our questions. Lewis, congratulations. You've taken a 11-10 lead. Congratulations. It's going into the fifth inning on Thursday. Joel Coleman. I appreciate you very much for coming onto the show today. You are awesome for doing so.
Hey, I appreciate you having me. And, if anybody, gets sick and tired of listening to me, then don't tune into Bulldog Sports Radio because I'll have another show at some point coming out this week myself. So if you enjoyed it, then stick around for mine later in the week. And if you didn't, well, the heck with you, I guess. I don't know.
All righty then. But on Thursday, it'll be me and someone else talking about previewing State Super Regional and other stuff. But yeah, until then, for Joel Coleman, I'm Daniel Black. Thank you all for listening. And bye-bye, everybody.